Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, July 1st, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabweans set warehouses on fire and bite bridges. Skirmishes between police and protesters continue over an import ban on basic commodities.
People were demonstrating at the South African side trying to send a message to the Zimbabwean government that we are not happy with the banning of the importation of some goods.
The civil servants resolved to go on strike Tuesday following government's failure to pay June salaries.
The employer must urgently address the concerns of the workers' failure, to which the workers have resolved to take action starting Tuesday, the 5th of July, 2016.
Some Zimbabweans commemorate the life and legacy of the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo.
We are here to celebrate the life of the late Joshua Nkomo, honor his legacy.
And a mystery surrounds the whereabouts of Ase Lumumba, who dropped an F-word on Mugabe yesterday when he launched his political party and has been reported as arrested.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
A business at Zimbabwe's biggest border post, Bait Bridge, came to a standstill for about 6 hours after hundreds of people from either side of the border demonstrated against the banning of some imports following the start of the implementation of a controversial statutory instrument. The protests that were coordinated by the combined Baitbridge Residents Association almost became violent after the people bent vehicle tires and piled rocks on the road, effectively barricading it. A warehouse was set on fire at the border town by protesters, and skirmishes with the police are continuing. South Africans from the town of Mosina combined with the Zimbabweans and marched towards the border, but were stopped by police who promised to engage with the Zimbabwe government to resolve the issue. The government, however, argues that the amendment of the statutory instrument, which was formulated by the Rhodesian government in 1974 as a way of countering sanctions, is a timely measure to rein in the ballooning import bill that has seen locally produced goods neglected because they are more expensive than imports. Included in the list is furniture, baked beans, potato crisps, cereals, bottled water, mayonnaise, salad cream, peanut butter, jams, maheu, vegetables and yogurts, among several others. The spokesman of the International Cross Border Association, Dennis Juru, tells Studio 7 that although calm has returned at the border town, dozens of people are hesitant to cross the border because they are not sure if their goods will be confiscated or not.
People were demonstrating at the South African side trying to send a message to the Zimbabwean government that we are not happy with the banning of the importation of some goods they used to import for the past years.
So what exactly happened? Did the police come, and what is the situation right now?
Yes, the police came, and they were even protecting the protesters.
So from what you could see, were these people Zimbabweans or South Africans?
It was a mixture of Zimbabweans and South Africans, all concerned, individuals.
We understand that the border was briefly closed. What is the situation right now?
The border was not briefly closed, but it was closed for about 6 hours. So we can't say it was briefly closed because it's a busy border.
That was Dennis Juru, the spokesman of the International Cross Borders Association. He spoke with Studio 7 on the line from Mosina in South Africa.
Unpaid Zimbabwean civil servants have resolved to go on an indefinite strike on Monday following the government's failure to pay them June salaries as a result of lack of funds. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details.
Cecilia Alexander, chairperson of the Apex Council, a body that represents all civil servant unions, told journalists after a meeting of head of unions that they'll be meeting government workers tomorrow to decide on the format of the industrial action.
The employer must urgently address the concerns of the workers' failure to which the workers have resolved to take action starting Tuesday, the 5th of July, 2016.
Alexander said all the 14 civil servants unions, including doctors and all workers in the health sector, were unanimous that government is treating them unfairly by not paying them on time. President Robert Mugabe's government failed to pay the civil servants, citing lack of funds resulting from the current harsh economic environment in the country. Indications are that members of the armed forces have received their pay. The rest of the civil service is set to get June salaries next week. Today, government made an advance payment of $100 to each civil servant to cushion them while they wait for the salaries next week. Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe member Alois Bima from Gokwe told Studio 7 he was disappointed about the government's failure to pay civil servants their June salaries.
This is not the way we are supposed to be treated. Like, we are adults, we've got families, we've got budgets. I have to receive my full salary, then I make my own budget. We cannot continue like this, because from the precedent cases which we have noticed, at the end we are going to have a situation whereby the government is going to owe the teacher thousands of dollars.
Acting Public Service Minister Superman Wanzira told Studio 7 by phone that government is doing all it can to ensure that its workers are paid on committed debts. He said the current predicament is as a result of the financial crisis that has not only affected government, but also the private sector, where some workers have gone for months without pay. Minister Mandwanzira appealed to civil servants and other stakeholders to bear with the government as it makes efforts to rectify the situation. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa told Zimbabwe's European creditors yesterday that his government was broke. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Scores of people gathered in Bulawayo today to commemorate the life of the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, with his son Sibanye-Lizwe calling on Zimbabweans to strive for the peace and unity that the veteran politician cherished throughout his life. Taura Ishava has more from Zimbabwe's second largest city.
Addressing hundreds of people at Makokoba High-Density Suburbs Stanley Square, Sibanye-Lizwe Nkomo said his father fought for a united Zimbabwe in which people were supposed to live in harmony despite ethnic and political differences. He said Zimbabweans should seek to live in harmony starting at the grassroots level.
It is the grassroots, the ordinary people, the ordinary men and women who suffer the brunt of conflict. For any lasting and enduring peace, there must be grassroots unity.
Veteran journalist Saul Gwakuba Ndlovu, who also spoke at the occasion, said it saddens him and other people who knew Nkomo well when some people maligned the late nationalist's name. He said Nkomo was a selfless leader who never sought personal gain throughout his political life.
He was asked whether if the British government was returning the country to the black people, he would like it to be returned as they found it in 1890. That is to say, when Matabeleland was a sovereign state with a sovereign leader, King Lobengula, and Mashonaland was a group of chiefdoms, each being independent unto itself. Or whether he would like it to be returned as the British created it in 1894, when they brought the chiefdoms of Mashonaland together with the kingdom of Matabeleland to create Southern Rhodesia. And he said he wanted it as a unitary state. He was very strong about that. He was very passionate about that.
Some youths who attended the event said they took part in the commemoration as a sign of honor for the late father Zimbabwe. War Veterans Minister and Makokoba Member of Parliament, Chinga Dube, said he was happy to be part of the commemoration.
Nkomo was a great leader, our national leader and the vice president of the country. So we're very happy to come and commemorate his death.
Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
The late vice president's associates say he was a peacemaker. Revived ZAPU leader Dumiso Dabengwa says the vision of former vice president Joshua Nkomo of a truly liberated Zimbabwe where citizens enjoy all their freedoms, a booming industry, and massive production on land can only be achieved if there is a complete mindset shift in the current ZANU-PF leadership. In this fifth edition of a six-part series on Nkomo's life and legacy, our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa looks into the former vice president's peace initiatives and efforts to empower the masses.
Dabengwa said Father Zimbabwe, as the late vice president was affectionately known in political circles, sacrificed a lot, including signing the Unity Accord, just to save the killing of people in Matabele land and the Midland provinces by the Korean-trained 5th Brigade. Dabengwa, who revealed that he never approved the Unity Accord, calling it a scandalous document, said Nkomo had people at heart and that forced him to sign the Unity Accord unconditionally. Dabengwa said President Robert Mugabe put conditions for Nkomo to meet him.
Mugabe completely refused to meet Nkomo and he said the only time I'll meet Nkomo before we do any negotiations, the condition for meeting him is that he must agree that we come together into a new party which will be called ZANU-PF. Number two, that the president of that party will be him. And number three, that Zenda and himself as junior vice president will be the vice president. People were being killed by Boko Haram in their hundreds. And Nkomo said we have to stop this. He agreed to go and sign that thing December 87.
Nkomo was unhappy about what was going on in Zimbabwe at that time, especially the crackdown on his party by President Mugabe's government.
Members of PF ZAPU in Parliament did mention that a number of people were killed in the western province of Zimbabwe. The people who were supposed to have perpetrated these murders called themselves Support Unit 5th Brigade. The cause of the massacre, they say, was that the people had begotten dissidents.
He was respected in all parts of the country. Chinoy resident Willie Nyambe said Nkomo was more accommodative than Mr. Mugabe. Nyambe said Nkomo wanted total freedom for Zimbabwe regardless of tribe and color.
Nkomo really wanted people to be free so that the Africans can run up their country in collaboration with the settler regime which was there. He did not want, he was not a divisive a personality. Right? You could accommodate both white, black, yellow in colors. He had no problem. But unlike the current situation where it is said blacks, Africa should be only for the blacks.
Another local resident, Adeline Uchu, who grew up in Bulawayo, said Nkomo was not power hungry as all he wanted was to totally liberate Zimbabwe.
I grew up in Matabele and myself in Msilikazi. I used to see him walking on foot, trying to help the people who were in need. And he was not pompous as we see today. Nkomo loved all the people and he wanted this country to be liberated, truly to be liberated.
Dabengwa, who received military training in Russia, prompting people to call him the Black Russian, said Nkomo had a clear vision on proper and practical indigenization and the utilization of land by all people.
Nkomo's vision was that land is not an infinite commodity. It is something that must be shared carefully, taking into account the next generations. And his vision was to have a Zimbabwe where everyone who used agricultural land used it on a commercial basis.
Sibongile mugijima ufuchikono ono in Chinoi, said Ngomo fought for genuine black empowerment and is well remembered for his fight to have businessmen Strive Masiwa get a mobile phone license.
He was for indigenization. I'll give an example of Strive Masiwa. He stood by Strive Masiwa.
Dalengwa said although Ngomo tried hard to make the government of the day see the light, he was labeled as now an old man.
What went wrong was because Ngomo was not listened to. He was an old man who was bubbling, making noise. Don't take him seriously. This was the attitude of ZANU-PF. Even in government as vice president, Ngomo made quite a number of suggestions which were never taken into account.
Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoi, this is Atta Chigoriwa.
Coming up, we will give you an update on what's happening in Zimbabwean soccer.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says she plans to accept the recommendations of career employees and federal agents looking into Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server during her time as Secretary of State.
And South African journalists took to the streets of Johannesburg and Cape Town Friday to protest what they say is an attempt at censorship by the nation's public broadcaster. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On June 26, commanders of Iraq's security forces announced they had completely retaken the city of Fallujah from ISIL, also known as Daesh. This is a significant blow to the extremist group, which has already lost nearly 50% of the populated territory it had once controlled in Iraq. Fallujah was the first major city ISIL had managed to capture some 2.5 years ago. Retaking the city, which once boasted around 300,000 inhabitants, required a month-long offensive by Iraq's military forces, as well as robust support from the global coalition to counter ISIL. The operation in Fallujah has been a significant challenge for the ISF and for the coalition. It will not be the last. Hard fighting remains ahead, as does the vital task of caring for the residents of Fallujah, displaced by ISIL's violence, and beginning to rebuild the city so that its people may safely return, said Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter in a written statement. The Iraqi army's work is far from finished in Fallujah. While initial reports are that the city was saved of the extensive damage seen in Ramadi and other places, it is yet to be made safe. When ISIL militants flee territories they once controlled, they litter the area with deadly explosive booby traps. Until these explosives are safely removed, reconstruction cannot commence, and the citizens of formerly occupied towns and villages cannot begin to return to normal life. Despite the hard work still to do, the clearing of Fallujah will make the people of Iraq safer and bring us all one step closer to dealing ISIL a lasting defeat, said Secretary of Defense Carter. The United States congratulates Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi and the Iraqi people for their progress in freeing the city of Fallujah from the grip of ISIL. The United States military and our coalition partners are proud to have supported Iraqi security forces under the Prime Minister's command in this important operation, which is another milestone in our joint efforts to accelerate ISIL's defeat and to continue supporting our Iraqi partners moving forward.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Mystery surrounds the whereabouts of Asim Lumumba, who dropped an F-word on Mugabe yesterday when he launched his political party. Police spokesperson Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba says they are looking for Lumumba, a former ZANU-PF activist who launched his party, Viva Zimbabwe, in Harare yesterday. Lumumba has not been reachable on his mobile phone, with his colleagues claiming that he is in police custody. Uttering the F-word, Lumumba claimed that Mr. Mugabe has destroyed the lives of millions of people due to his government's poor economic policies.
In a related development, a Harare magistrate today ordered the immediate release of Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni, who was arrested sometime this week soon after the High Court made a ruling that he should be reinstated by the Minister of Local Government, Xavier Kasukuwere. Reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Harare magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe ordered Manyenyeni's immediate release after he found that the Harare mayor was detained illegally prior to his arraignment before the court. Manyenyeni's lawyer, Love Momaduku, welcomed the court's decision.
So what we now know is that the mayor is back at work, as you know. The High Court nullified suspensions by the minister. The arrest is not held. So, and there are no conditions, no nothing. I must remind you that the state had actually wanted to impose, they had wanted a bail conditions that would have stopped the mayor from reporting for work. That has all fallen apart because the arrest was then declared no longer lawful because they had gone beyond 48 hours.
MDCT Secretary General Douglas Monzora, who attended today's court session, said his party was not happy that the state was persecuting Manyenyeni.
We are happy that at least there are signs of constitutionalism beginning to creep within our judicial system. And we are very, very happy about that. We want to give notice that tomorrow we are going to take our mayor to townhouse to resume his duty, which he was elected to do by the people of Harare themselves. This is a mandate that the minister cannot take away from him. We think that this is a victory for the people of Zimbabwe.
Court papers show that Manyenyeni allegedly abused his duty as a public officer when he unilaterally and single-handedly entered into a verbal agreement with two companies, Distinctive Consultancy Services and High Post Consultant Services, for the provision of shortlisting, selection and screening services for filling the post of the city's town clerk that was later filled by James Mushore. The state claims that Manyenyeni personally influenced the outcome of the shortlisting, selection and screening process. Following the judgment, wards of MDCT supporters who had filled the court to capacity sang revolutionary songs denouncing Minister Kasukuwere. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chiona Sojani, your host for Time to Engage, where the voices of Zimbabwe's youth are heard. Today we have another great guy, and his name is Blessing Chinanga. How are you, Blessing?
I'm good, Chi. How you doing?
We are great. So, Blessing, tell us, how did you get into filmmaking?
Okay, I got into filmmaking at the age of, I think I was about 20, and I started writing a lot of scripts, started writing a lot of short films, short stories, and that's what led me to get into this film industry, which then translated on camera. Started with photography, and then I got into translating it onto video. So it was quite a journey between writing, photography, and film.
Tell us about your work that you are doing, like, right now.
Well, we've got a TV show called Wine and Zine with Tubi Moleko, and that aired on Zambezi Magic. And it did well, you know, the ratings were really good. The TV show stars many celebrities coming on the show. They get interviewed by Tumi Moleko, who cooks a meal for them, and, you know, while they're sort of dining with her. It's a really good show. It's very informative. You get an up-close interview with the celebrities, but it's not really an interview. It's like an informal-based type of came up with.
What is your say regarding the filming industry right now in Zimbabwe?
If you're in the film industry in Zimbabwe at the moment, there are massive opportunities because we have the chance to pave history. We have the chance to carve heroes that kids will talk about in the future, which is something that we actually haven't had for the last 20 years. If you've noticed, the films that many people quote, many people talk about, they talk about your Nerias, your More Time, your Yellow Cards, which are films that a lot of people watched 20 years ago. At the moment, there's such a vacuum of content. You know, there's a vacuum that people can create content right now, and it needs to be filled. There's a great opportunity if you're in the film industry to create stories that will tell a story, a Zimbabwean story, a relevant story right now.
With lots of young people out there trying to get into film, I mean, what would be your advice?
The young person trying to get into film, I'd say that start writing, and if you can meet up with people that are doing film in the industry, just go and visit, see what they're doing, go on their sets, you know, expose yourself, and just have a willingness to learn, have a willingness to go, have a willingness to do stuff, you know, have a willingness to understand what other people are doing in the industry. I think just don't sit back and think that the opportunity is going to come on your lap. You have to go out there and take it.
Thank you very much for being with us, Blessing.
Thank you for having me.
And that was Blessing Chinanga, and I am Chiona Sojani, your host for Time to Engage.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
And in sports news, the newly created National Football Association of Zimbabwe has been caught between a rock and a hard place. Our reporter Michael Cariati tells us why.
The NAFA's leadership has been forced to swallow their pride and have called for a meeting of the ZIFA Council to have a relook at the disputed June 4 dissolution of ZIFA after the government maintained that ZIFA was still in existence. According to a circular sent to all the affiliates of the Zimbabwe Football Association, within the required 14-day notice, the meeting is set for July 9, with the sole purpose being to look at the hotly disputed dissolution of ZIFA. NAFA's president, Philip Chiangwa, confirmed the date has been set for the meeting. The chairman of the Lifelong Footballers Trust of Zimbabwe, Francis Zimunya, who has been giving his support for the ZIFA employees and ZIFA creditors, says he's happy with the decision taken by the government. Addressing a section of the Zimbabwe football family opposed to the creation of NAFA, Zimunya says he knew long back that ZIFA was still in existence and was operational throughout the country.
We wanted to tell the whole country the truth about the position of Zimbabwe football at the moment. It's very clear that Zimbabwe Football Association is in existence. It's operational countrywide.
The owner of Daisy Guest House, Daisy Rusere, who has been hosting the Warriors for years, says she is bitter with the way she was treated.
And for them to run away from us and say we are now NAFAs, we don't take care of ZIFA debts. With me, I tell you, I don't even know how to express myself, but definitely I was so bitter. I was so bitter, and I'm still bitter.
Daisy Guesthouse, reporting for Studio 7 in Harare. This is Michael Cariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners about the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo's life and legacy.
If you want to be on the program, you can send us a message or your number on our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. That number again, 001-202-465-0318.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Zimbabweans set fire to a warehouse in Beitbridge as skirmishes between police and protesters continue over an import ban on basic commodities.
The civil servants resolve to go on strike Tuesday following government's failure to pay June salaries.
And mystery surrounds the whereabouts of AC Lumumba, who dropped an F-word on the president yesterday when he launched his political party.
Join us at 7 every evening for news in 3 languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com. For more on our top stories, you can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com or text us at the following number, 001-202-465-0318. And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by Ntungamili Nkomo. This is Chris Gande in Washington. Have yourself a lovely weekend.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a great weekend.